program dedicated to restoring the Constitution and prosperity to America. Let Freedom Ring is brought to you at this time, Monday through Friday. Let Freedom Ring is designed to enhance your understanding of one single document. A document that brought millions to our shores who sought relief from crushing taxation and political and legal repression. A document that at one time made the United States the largest creditor nation in the world. A document that gave one single nation of people more goods and services than any other people throughout history. A document that created the wealthiest nation of people on earth. A document that, for the first time in the annals of man, made the government the servant of the people. A document that made America a Garden of Eden among nations. The document is, of course, the United States Constitution. And now, here to talk about the Constitution is your host, Bill Kemp.
Thank you, Larry. Today on this program, we have Greg Soderberg from Austin, Minnesota. Now, Austin, Minnesota is near the Iowa line, clear up in the northern tier of states. Greg, does it get pretty cold up there?
Sure does. Sometimes it gets to be about 40, 50 below with the wind chill, but it's about 35 today.
That's reasonably warm for your time of year, isn't it?
Yep.
Greg, you are with the Coalition to Reform Money, and you've been working at this for some time. You want to talk about the Coalition to Reform Money, where it is and what their address is and so on and so forth, in case anybody in the audience may want to write it down.
Okay, Bill. The Coalition to Reform Money is a grassroots organization, and it's growing nationwide, and our address is 7007 Linmar Lane. That's Linmar Lane, Edina, Edina, Minnesota, 55435.
Now, tell me, Greg, how you propose to reform money.
Well, Bill, what we'd like to do is we'd like to change the way money comes into circulation. We'd like to see money once again come into circulation as a wealth to the people with no debt attached to it, rather than having all the money come into circulation as interest-bearing loans the way it is now.
In other words, you're not happy with our current Federal Reserve system?
Well, not really, because obviously it's creating a lot of problems. It isn't too long if you turn on the radio and you listen to the news for a while, or if you open up a newspaper or magazine or you watch a TV news story, it isn't really very long before we're talking about money problems. Basically, two big questions are coming up more and more again, and those are, why is everything so expensive, and where are we going to get the money to pay for everything? And you see, the debt credit money system that we have today is the root of the problem. It's why we have all this debt, and it's why everything keeps getting more and more expensive. And in the system, you have to have more debt if you're going to have any more money, because all the money is created as a loan. When you or I go to the bank and get a loan, the bank creates brand new money that they lend you. They don't lend you a savings account, and they don't lend you someone else's money. They create brand new money that never existed before. And of course, when all money comes into circulation this way, all we ever get is the principal of the loan. If you want to borrow $100, that's all you get. But the problem is all these loans have to be paid back with interest. And the interest is never created at the time of the loan. As a matter of fact, it's never created. The only way I can pay back my loan with interest is to get some of the principal from your loan. And of course, when I pay my loan back then to the bank, my checking account goes down to zero, or the amount of the loan. and my loan account at the bank goes down to zero, and the principal money created at the time of the loan is uncreated, doesn't exist anymore. And now somebody else is out there. They're not only short the interest they never got, but they're short the some principal too. And it, the system forces us to constantly borrow, and this is, people don't understand how this all works. They just think if they work hard that all the money they ever need is out there. They just have to work hard to get it, and the fact of the matter is that there isn't enough money out there to satisfy our economic needs, and there never will be under this system. And so that's why you have today, if you check Barron's Financial paper, or you look in the Wall Street Journal or check an economics indicators book, you can actually find out how much money exists in our economy. And the total liquidity of the country is just about $5 trillion. And all of those dollars are interest-bearing loans. They wouldn't even exist if someone hadn't gone to the bank and got them as a loan. Okay. And we're worried about a $4.7 trillion national debt, but few people realize that the total debt, the total public and private debt in America at the end of 1990 was over $26 trillion. And you see, so we got a problem, and America's monetary system has been changed over the years. It used to be a wealth money system, and they changed it to a debt-credit money system.
Greg, let's follow this through a little bit. So okay. The only time I ask questions usually when I think that maybe the audience
That's fine.
Is not going to grasp what we're talking about.
Well, please do, because I can go on, and sometimes I wonder, you know, maybe if I've lost somebody, and it's a little easier, I suppose, if you ask questions. So go ahead.
Okay, you go into a bank, you borrow $100, all right? Mm-hmm. The bank then puts the $100 in your account, and they carry that as an asset on their books because it's an outstanding loan, which is owed to which they own. And you, in turn, as the person who borrows the money, he gets $100 in his account, all right?
Yep.
Now,
and that money never existed before. Until that loan was made.
Right. And it's really a paper transaction, isn't it?
Yes.
There's nothing that the bank really paid out. In effect, they just put $100 in your account. They didn't take it out of their vaults, did they?
Right. What they did is you go into the bank, and first of all, they decide if they're going to give you the loan in the first place. And, you know, sometimes that's the tricky part, too, just getting to the point to where they'll make the loan for you. But... let's say you want to borrow $100 and they're going to borrow you $100. What they do is either with a pen or electronic key entry, they make a minus debit of $100 to a loan account. They create that loan account because they want to keep track of the money that they lend you, right? So they make a debit to your loan account, $100. Then they make a credit to a new demand account or an existing demand account, which are checking accounts. Most of us realize them as checking accounts. They make a credit to the checking account of $100, and then they hand you a deposit slip and says, here, we've deposited that money in your checking account. And now when you go out and start writing checks against your checking account, you put brand new money into circulation that never existed before. And so that's how they do that.
Now, the fundamentals of contract law is that some consideration must take place.
Mm-hmm.
And really, no consideration takes place because the bank really didn't give you anything of value, just created money.
Well, Bill, I mean...
I don't mean to be hard.
Yeah, value is really... value is determined between a willing buyer and a willing seller at any point in time, and value can constantly change. But I think our money has value, and you know, I went and I put, I think, $5 worth of gas in the car this morning, and I gave the lady a $5 Federal Reserve note, and she let me have the gas for the $5 Federal Reserve note. She apparently thought it had value to her. And our money has value from the standpoint of that It allows us to exchange goods and services. But the problem is that those dollars created as interest-bearing debts always create a debt that is greater than the money supply. And that unpayable debt has to be reflected in the costs of goods and services. That's why you have inflation. And it's kind of hard maybe to explain it on the telephone, but I'll try briefly. Let's say we're going to create an economy, and we don't. There's no money that exists right now, but we're going to create an economy, and we decide that I will be the only one who can create the money, and everyone has to come and get it from me. And so you, Bill, come to me and borrow $100, and I create a debit to a loan account of $100 and a credit to your checking account, and now I've created $100. There's $100 in the economy, okay? Now, if I only even just charge you 1% interest, at the end of the first year, you will owe me $101, won't you?
Right.
Okay. Now, if I don't lend any more money out there, you can't really ever pay me back, can you? Because I only created $100, but you owe me $101.
Right.
Okay. And now, let's say I loan somebody else $100. Now there's $200 in the economy. One of you should be able to get out of debt. You might be able to, maybe you sell borrower number two a ballpoint pen, let's say, for $1. Now you've got the $100 that I loaned you, plus you've got $1 from the other man's loan, right?
Right.
And now you can write me a check. And when you do, your checking account goes down $101 to zero. And your loan account, when I credit that to your loan account, the loan account disappears and the first $100 is eliminated. It doesn't exist anymore. And me, the lender, I keep the $1 in interest for myself. But now man number two, he only has $99 and he owes me $101. So he's $2 short. And what happens is his debt just constantly grows out there in the economy. And man number two, he can't get out of debt. Let's say I loan you $100 again. Now, man number two has $99 and a pen. If he spends any of his $99, he's going to have to get that back too. So he says, well, I'm just going to try to get out of this by selling Bill this pen back to him. And so he says, Bill, would you like to buy this pen back? And well, you say, I guess so. How much would you have for it? And, of course, he's got $99, but he needs $101. So he's going to say, oh, I got to have at least $2 for the pen. So you see right there, the pen inflated in price from $1 to $2 because of a shortage of money. And that's why we have inflation, is because of a shortage of money. They try to tell you inflation is caused by too much money, but the problem is it's caused by a shortage of money. So if you give him $2 for the pen, $2 plus $99 is $101. He can pay back the loan, and his original loan of $100, the money is extinguished, and I got another $1 in my profit margin, and you're sitting over there with $98, and you owe $101. Now you're $3 short. And it's kind of hard to explain just, you know, on the telephone. It's a little easier if you can go through it on an overhead projector or something, or on a piece of paper with some, just to actually show you the transactions. But that's what's causing the problems. And what really happens in this system is that the title or mortgages to all property eventually are held by a very, very few people. And as a few people get richer and richer, more and more people get poorer and poorer and have a hard time making ends meet. And this really promotes socialism, and that's basically what we've been fighting for quite a while in America now, is the growth of socialism, because as people out here in the economy and society have a harder and harder time making ends meet, then they're willing to go to the government and ask for help. And so, of course, the government, they don't have any money unless they tax us. And so it puts pressure on taxes to create social health programs for these people that aren't making it. And that's where we're at right now with this balanced budget amendment, is that we're arguing about, you know, who's going to win and who's going to lose. Because if you balance the budget, in other words, get Congress so that they only spend what they take in taxes, then that means Congress is trying to say, we will not sell bonds or we will not bond the American people into debt to create the money that we don't have in taxes. And now, if there's a demand out there for programs and you cut the funding for the programs, there's going to be a lot of hurting and squealing. And I think if they ever did really try to balance the budget, you either have greater pressure for greater taxation, or you just have a heck of a lot of suffering that you didn't have before. And it really wouldn't solve the debt problem, because the American people, although we got a national debt of $4.7 trillion, which we wouldn't even had if you had a wealth money system, after that, the American people themselves still have over $20 trillion in private debt. And I just never knew anybody who was really concerned about paying a $5 trillion debt when they had a $20 trillion debt sitting over on the other side and they only had $5 trillion in credit to pay it with. And so we need to change our money system. And the Coalition for Reform Money has authored a bill called the Money Reform Act that is in legislative form. It has been hand-delivered by us to the 102nd Congress. And about the time we got done doing that, of course, we had some new congressmen, so we're constantly trying to get it in front of the new congressman, and we're looking for a sponsor, someone who would introduce the bill to Congress and at least give the American people the opportunity to understand why it is we're having so many economic problems and what the solution would be. And to explain the solution, you need to understand a couple of things. In 1792, our founding fathers passed an act called the 1792 Coinage Act. And what it meant is that any person could, with their labor, go out and dig or pan or mine gold or silver, a raw resource, from the earth with their labor, and then take that to the U.S. Mint. They would weigh it, assay it, and coin it into money for that person free of charge. And with that system then, we the people could create money with no debt attached to it. Basically, the government monetized our production. And that would benefit all the people, because now we could have a medium of exchange that had no debt attached to it. Okay? And so for a number of years, up until 1873, most of the money was created that way. Of course, during that time, the banking system still was willing to loan people gold notes. They told the people, well, it's backed by the gold. But at that point in time, when they loaned you a $100 gold note, they were changing the money from wealth to debt, because the new money came in, when the banks loaned it in, came in as an interest-bearing debt. But you see, the interest could be paid if there was some wealth money in circulation. And in 1864, they passed the National Banking Act. That allowed the banks to fractionalize off of government debt, bonds, securities. And in 1873, they suspended free coinage. And today, there's nothing out there to pay interest with. And that's how come the debt keeps getting so big and why the cost of living keeps going up.
Let's hold up for a minute, Greg, because we're coming up to a commercial.
Okay.
This is...
Folks, if you never read another book in your life, you have to read The Federal Mafia, How the Federal Government Illegally Collects Income Taxes. It explains in simple language how the federal government has been collecting income taxes in violation of law, and how you can fight back. It explains how you can immediately stop your employer from taking taxes out of your pay, how you can stop the IRS from illegally seizing your property, and why all IRS liens are illegal and recorded in violation of law. Irwin Schiff's book is undoubtedly the greatest exposé of all time, since it exposes how 100 million Americans have been duped into believing that they are required to pay income taxes. It's all documented with over 55 Internal Revenue Code sections. See the law for yourself. Have you ever looked into the Internal Revenue Code? Have you ever seen a law that says you have to pay income taxes? Would you believe there is no such law? And Irwin Schiff will pay $1,000 to anyone who sends to this program any law that says Americans have to pay income taxes. Schiff's book is loaded with government documents which show how, for years, the government has been pulling the wool over our eyes. For example, here is an excerpt from a letter sent by Senator Daniel Inouye's office to his constituents in Hawaii. Based on the research performed by the Congressional Research Service, there is no provision which requires an individual to pay income taxes. Can you believe it? And from a U.S. senator, no less. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. The Federal Mafia is a 304-page, 8.5-by-11-inch manual that proves that everything the federal government does in collecting income taxes, it does in violation of law. But more important, it will give you the ammunition to fight back. Now, not all bookstores stock the Federal Mafia. You can get a copy by sending $25 to Freedom Books, P.O. Box 80555, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46898. And we'll send you a copy by priority mail. Let me repeat that address. Freedom Books, P.O. Box 80555, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46898. If you forget the address, call toll-free 1-800-TAX-NO-MORE. And hear it repeated. So get a copy of The Federal Mafia today and never fear the IRS again. There is a 100% money-back guarantee if you are not satisfied. Call toll-free 1-800-829-6666. That's 1-800-TAX-NO-MORE.
And we're speaking with Greg Soderberg from the Coalition for Money Reform, Monetary Reform in Austin, Minnesota. Greg, we left off where you were talking about when they fractionalized the money. You might explain that term to the audience so that they understand it.
Okay. Well, you remember in the beginning, Bill, I told you that the banks don't lend you anything that they have. Okay.
Right.
What fractional reserve banking is for... Whatever deposits they have in the bank, they can create brand new money based upon those deposits. So let's say if you write a check to your friend for $100, and when that check hits that friend's bank, that's looked upon as a new deposit. And now that bank, as long as they have that deposit, can create up to $900 in new loans. And see, that's what fractional reserve banking is. And a lot of people, when we talk about the gold and silver standard, they think that was really wonderful and that we should go back to that. But all that was that the banks were fractionalizing off of the gold and silver deposits. We weren't using the gold and silver for money. It was used as a basis for creating the new money. And you see, that's what fractional reserve banking is. That's how they expand the money supply. And, you know, that's Andrew Jackson. He did a good thing. He got rid of the central bank. But I don't really think that Andrew Jackson and some of those people understood the problem, because if Andrew Jackson had understood the problem, he would have got rid of fractional reserve banking and reinstated the free coinage of money so that the people could have a medium of exchange that they didn't have to be in debt to have. And that's what fractional reserve banking is.
And so, we've gone through the problems here, and where do we go from here then?
Well, of course, people need to, first of all, understand that there is a problem before they can do anything about a problem, and they need to ask themselves three questions. What is it that we really use for money? How is that money created? How does it get into circulation? New money. How does new money get into circulation so that you and I can use it? And when they understand that, then they'll start being able to understand why we're having so much economic problems and what the solution to the problem would be, okay? And I'll explain that solution, and then really people need to just, you know, call their elected representatives and put the pressure on them to slow down enough and take the time to look at something that they hardly ever have time to look at. They're so busy putting out all the brush fires caused by this debt credit money system that they can't even hardly sit still to look at anything like this. But, you know, gold and silver came into circulation as a wealth to the people when they combined their labor with the raw resource of the earth. What we would like to see happen with the Money Reform Act is it says basically that we would once again go back to the principles of gold and silver. And that would be you combine labor with the raw resource of the earth to produce a benefit to everyone and monetize that as a debt-free medium of exchange. So in other words, when you built roads and bridges, rather than tax for them, the Treasury would create brand new money to pay for that production. All of our goods and services and our commerce move on the roads and bridges. The people then could use all the roads and bridges with no fees or no taxes of any kind. And when that road was done to specifications according to bid, the person in charge of the bid and paying the contractor would send an affidavit to the Treasury and say, the work's done, we want to be paid. And then the Treasury would create that money just like they do now with a bookkeeping entry. It could be electronic transfer to someone's account. It could be a check. It could be coins. It could be bills. But the bills would not say Federal Reserve Note. They just might say United States of America on them. And when the contractor got paid, he'd pay the workers, and the workers would go out, and they'd pay their bills and buy their groceries, and the money would go into circulation debt-free. Now you'd have money in circulation capable of paying down the debt that's out there. And, of course, as the debt came out of everything, your prices would come down. And because you wouldn't have all the taxation on this infrastructure, the cost of freight would go down. And, of course, then the prices would go down some more because if you didn't have all the freight charges from the taxation, your prices would be less. And, of course, once again, as the debt comes down and things become more affordable and people can actually save money, you're going to have more productivity and you're not going to have a big demand for social programs. And that's the only reason people are hollering about programs is because, for some reason or other, they can't seem to make it work and they got to go to the government. And so your government would be smaller. And, of course, one of the things you'd have to do is that you'd have to put some kind of an excess profits tax on the banks so that they wouldn't get all the interest, again, the benefit of all the new money to them. You'd have to tax a portion of the interest back. And, of course, you know, you wouldn't want to put them out of business because you'd still want them to be able to have checking accounts and loan money and do everything they do except create money as a debt to the rest of us. And so if the government taxed that money back, they would once again have a source of money to pay for some of these other social programs we have now until your system come around to where you didn't need those programs anymore. And eventually we'd once again get back to being a prosperous country not the greatest debtor nation in the world, and if we the people would start understanding this problem, we could have a hope that once again we would get back to leading the world morally, ethically, spiritually, economically, pick your arena. But that's what America was supposed to do, and today, basically, America is just comparing itself and how it does with how other countries are doing. And I never knew a real leader that compared himself to everybody else. A real leader, he just led the way and the rest of them followed. And you know, that's what we're going to have to do. And the root of the problem is the money system.
The money is the root of all problems, it seems.
Well, it's usually because we're short of it.
Right.
You know, and I don't understand why a country or a people who are willing to work have to be so deep in debt. And, you know, we're not prosperous because we need to borrow. We're not prosperous because we're in debt. We're not prosperous because even now two paycheck families are having a hard time making ends meet. We obviously can't afford health care. There's so many problems out there that we can't afford. And that's, you know, we're working harder and faster and leaner and meaner, and we got computers and fax machines and cellular telephones and all these wonderful things, but things are not really getting any better. And, they might be getting better for a few people, but a truly prosperous society would, your entire society would move ahead. They may be on different levels, but they would all be moving ahead. And, you know, this is the reason, because we use debt for money. If we don't borrow, there is no money. And that's an incredible thought. And I was on a radio show a while back when a broker came on the phone, and he said that, well, if everybody just saved 10% of what they earn and invested it, it would grow and everybody would have plenty of money. And I said, yeah, but what is it that they're saving? And he said, well, their income. And I said, well, where do they get that? And he says, well, from their boss. But I said, yeah, but what do we use for money? Can we all go to the bank and borrow money and then put it in a savings account and get out of debt and be prosperous? No. And American people have to understand that money does not grow. The only way that you can increase the money supply under the current system is to go to the bank, either the government, a corporation, or an individual, and create the money by borrowing it as a loan. And the interest, when you put money in a savings account, that interest does not grow as new money. That interest is simply paid by the bank as profit from that they've captured in the process of commerce from someone else's money that was created as a loan. So for you to get ahead with interest on your money, someone else has to go just as far behind. And if you've got more money than you have debt, you've got money that someone else is in debt for, and they can't get out of debt because you have it. And it's the craziest thing. I mean, 2 or 3 years ago, I got involved with this, and boy, when I started to understand it, and today I walk down the street, and it's just incredible what Americans and America is attempting to do with this monetary system that we have. And if we don't change it, we're going to lose our country. We're going to lose any future we thought we had, our dreams. And I think you can kind of see that happening, that things are not getting any better, even though everybody's trying to cut and be efficient and not waste, and they're trying to be hard workers and be productive, and it just isn't working out, and it's because of our monetary system. Did I lose you at all?
No, you didn't lose me. I was just thinking.
Okay.
You know, I've talked to a number of people across the country about monetary systems and things. Mm-hmm. Were you aware that Nevada is, I was told this by T. David Horton, who's with the committed to restore the Constitution of Nevada is striking a silver $20 coin.
Well, I just have to ask, how will that $20 coin come into circulation? Now, are you going to go down and have to give someone Federal Reserve notes, debt money to buy it, to get it? Are you going to have to write them a check? Or will it be the kind of thing that you can, you know, is it created as a wealth? And if, you know, if we were using gold and silver for money, Bill, and the only way that you and I could get it is first someone would have to go down to the bank and borrow it, then our gold and silver would still come in as a debt to us, and you'd still have the mathematical problem of paying the interest. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to, I don't know enough about the $20 Nevada silver coin, but it has to come in regardless of what we use for money. And you know, Bill, I don't think it really matters because look at America. 250 million Americans out there don't even realize what they're using for money now. All they really care about is that when they go to the store, they'll take it for the groceries.
Right.
Okay. But what is important is that whatever it is we decide to use as a medium of exchange comes into circulation debt-free. And I believe, like the 1792 Coinage Act, it has to come into circulation debt-free as payment for production done. In other words, just like we teach our children, you know, you can't expect to get money for nothing. You have to work for it. You don't get anything for nothing. There has to be a fair exchange. And we should apply that principle to our nation's money system. And we could create money in this country just like we do now, but bring it in as payment for something that we all benefit from, which would be roads and bridges, and it's something that the government can't hurt you with. And most of the other things that you could create, you know, you just, first of all, you wouldn't need to monetize everything. You just need to monetize something that benefits all the people so you can bring the money in and start getting the debt out of the system. Because, you know, if they decide, well, we can monetize prisons, then the government would build all these prisons and maybe they'd throw them all of us in them. Or maybe they'd create a whole bunch of schools out there and teach them all the things the government wants them to know, and then we'd have more problems. So you have to always tie this to, does it benefit all the people, not just a few? Because the system we have now benefits just a few, and we have to have a system where everyone benefits. So if that silver dollar in Nevada is coming in, I hope it's coming in debt-free with no debt attached to it. And hopefully it'll come into circulation because someone did some work for it.
I don't really know that, but I just I wanted to mention in passing because I didn't know whether you'd heard about it or not.
Yeah. Now, we have, at the Coalition Reform Money last May, we've been doing this for quite a while, and of course people have a lot of questions, and they sort of grasp it. You know, normally you have to hear this, get exposed to it 4, 5, 6 times before you really start getting it, but we decided we had to put out a monthly news journal, and we call it Money Talks, and it really kind of explains the things that we've been talking about, and it's available to people if they want to write for it. It's $26 for a year's subscription. You get 12 issues, and it really goes through this over and over again, and every month they can get it and get it in front of them and really get a good idea of what we're talking about. And if they would like that, Money Talks, they can send $26 to Coalition Reform Money, 7007 Linmar Lane, Edina, Minnesota, 55435, and we'll get them one out with the next issue.
And I would suggest that everybody do that, because if you're going to learn about your money system, you might as well get the magazine. We'll be back after this commercial.
Let Freedom Ring is a program dedicated to restoring the United States Constitution, prosperity to America. If you would like to help, contact your local radio station and ask them to air Let Freedom Ring.
The program is aired at this time, Monday through Friday, and Sunday. If you want to help by sponsoring the program, a free sampler tape is available by calling 1-800-7777-USA. That number for the free sampler tape again, 1-800-7777-USA. Send for the tape today. The philosopher Goethe wrote, "None are more enslaved than those who think they are free." While we think we are free, our United States Constitution, the greatest human rights document ever written, is being destroyed by our courts, our politicians, and our people. The government, in its official literature, states the income tax is by voluntary compliance and self-assessment. Yet government prosecutors and judges put people in jail when they don't voluntarily comply. In order to put people in jail, the offense must be listed in the United States Criminal Code. U.S. federal judges put people in jail for failure to file income taxes when there is nothing in the U.S. Code to support these unlawful incarcerations. We are being illegally and unlawfully taxed to serfdom, as our people are now paying 50% of their incomes to support federal, state, and local government. Throughout history, inflation caused the downfall of every great civilization. Our money, once the rock upon which the world rested, is becoming worthless. Inflation is ravaging our savings, our properties, our wages. Our money, mandated by the Constitution to be gold and silver coin only, is now worthless paper currency issued by a private corporation. IRS agents seize property without the due process of law required by the Constitution. Our constitutional rights, which made the people in government our servants, is reversed. We are now the servants of people in government. Federal judges continue to relentlessly and diabolically advance their noiseless steps like thieves over the field of jurisdiction, usurping the states and reaching their vicious tentacles into every state, community, and home in violation of the Constitution. You can make a difference by sponsoring and airing Let Freedom Ring. Jefferson said, "Trust the people." You will be informing our people of their rights under our United States Constitution. Contact your local radio station today and encourage them to air Let Freedom Ring. Call today for the free sampler tape at 1-800-7777-USA. That's 1-800-777-7872.
We're back. This may sound very confusing to the average person out there, because I think once you go through this, it's a little difficult for them to grasp.
I understand it is.
And when we come back, when we talk about money and we talk about a medium of exchange, which we have to have for worldwide exchange,
right.
If somebody came up here to Minnesota and gave you some pesos today, pesos right now are kind of a bad word.
Yeah.
But if they gave you pesos, you'd say, get out of here and either give me American money or give me gold or silver.
Mm-hmm.
Foreigners, if I were trading with someone in the United States, and knowing our monetary condition now, I would want gold in exchange.
Mm.
Why?
Why? Yeah.
Well, because it's recognized worldwide as a thing of value.
Right. That's true.
All right. Now we're talking about, you know, when you talk about and I'm just throwing.
That's fine. Go ahead.
When you talk about, you know, something that is of benefit to everybody,
right,
that is created. There's where I have a stumbling block as to how are you going to deal with people outside of the United States.
Well, I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about the United States first, and I guess, you know, the Money Reform Act deals with government securities, foreign debt, private debt, and how that would all, how we would deal with that in the transition. What you or your listeners really need to do is get a copy of the Money Reform Act and read it. It will answer a lot of those questions. And they can get that from us, too. The initial copy is $6. and that includes the postage, but you can make all the copies you want when you get it. And we charge for these things because it costs us money to make them, and we have a lot of costs with telephone bills and travel expenses, and quite frankly, we have regular jobs too, and it gets kind of hard to support this effort and the family at the same time. So our main concern is to get the money system switched so that we can all get back to not worrying about how much money we don't have. But the Money Reform Act deals with all that, you know, so and I think that's where we should first be concerned. I mean, America is the one that's carrying all the debt burden for the world, and we're asking our people to somehow be productive, and that's going to solve all the problems. You know, if we want to increase productivity, and that's fine, let's say we create 100 widgets a day and we want to create 110, that's fine. But unless you increase the money supply to handle that additional production, all of your widgets are going to have to sell for less. Okay? And the only way that we can increase the money supply to move the increased productivity in this country is to use that productivity as collateral to create a loan that creates the additional money. And that's why no matter how much more productive we become in our country, we're still getting deeper in debt, because you can't have any more productivity without having more debt. It's a terrible, nasty, evil thing, and we're not getting ahead doing it, and mathematically we can't get ahead doing it. And a lot of people like to talk about the balance of trade. Well, if we just sell more stuff to so-and-so, we'll be better off. But you have to know that the rest of the world is on the same kind of a money system we are. They've just been on it longer. And if we capture some of their loan principal and get ahead, then they start hurting. And, of course, you know what happens then. Then we have to pay out more foreign aid, and we have to have more programs and give away programs for those people. And the money shortages never stop. They just grow bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's why we have to work harder and harder to basically maintain our standard of living. But a lot of people are having to go without, because as the prices go up to try to accommodate this unpayable interest, they don't have the money to pay the prices, and so they don't buy as many things. And, of course, then you have your demand shrinks, and, of course, then the factories and the employers and that, they got to lay off people because there isn't a demand. And it isn't because we don't want the goods and services, it's just we can't come up with the money to buy them. And that's how come we have to borrow so much, and how come everybody's concerned about interest rates, or what the Fed's going to do with the interest rates. Is it going to be higher? Is it going to be lower? How much are credit card rates going to be? Because as a society, I don't think we've really understood that, you know, we use credit for money. And if we don't borrow, there isn't any money. And that's how come everybody's always concerned about the interest rates. But wouldn't it be nice if once again, when we went to the bank, we'd be going there to put money in rather than to take money out? Because that's what we used to do. But now, you know, the banks aren't just depositories like they used to be to safely keep our money. The banks are the creators. And the problem with it is it hurts the banks too. In the Money Talks journal that it's in the printers now, but it's going to be mailed out in a few days here. We show this on T charts. These are the bookkeeping charts that the banks use. We show 10 people borrowing $100 each at 10%. We go right through every transaction and show how someone has to wind up losing at the end, losing all their property. And this is what happens. It isn't even, it's just unfair, it's unjust, and when one of those guys cannot pay their loan, the bank has to pay for that bad loan dollar for dollar out of its profit margin. And if the bank gets too many bad loans, and somebody has to get them because there's all kinds of them out there, then that bank goes under too. And all the people who worked at the bank they're out looking for a new job or they're getting unemployment, and of course that means there are less checks out there, paychecks out there to buy goods and services, and it puts more pressure on taxation to pay for the unemployment and the other programs that those people need. Meanwhile, the banks and the corporations get bigger, but they get fewer of them. And with that becomes greater and greater control of property and money and power. And that's the American people see in their Congress, for example, that they don't have any representation. And you know, that's what's happened. We're losing our representative government because of this money system and what it does. And every day we wake up, we are controlled by economics. You know, I remember it was 15 years ago, someone told me, someday, Greg, the wars won't be with planes and bombs, they'll be economic wars. And that's where we're at right now. Yet, the 13th Amendment says we're not supposed to have involuntary servitude in this country, no slavery. And it's exactly what we have, is that we, the people, are enslaved to unpayable compounding debt, which causes an ever-rising cost of living that becomes more and more unmeetable every day. And if we really want to be a free and prosperous people, we need to understand our money system, and we need to understand the solution to it, and we need to get our Congress people to slow down and say, hey, you take a look at this. So I'm out here working hard and honest every day, but this thing's working against me. And it's working. If I get ahead, somebody else has to go behind, and that's not right. We should all be able to go out and work just as hard and come out at the same place. And it's not possible with this money system. It's kind of like a musical chairs game. It's kind of like a Ponzi game.
Oh, Greg, you know, as in the past, as the nation formed and we were on the gold and silver standard,
well, we weren't even on a gold and silver standard. We used gold and silver for money. When we were on a gold and silver standard, we were using debt for money because the money didn't come out debt-free. The banks held the money as gold and silver as deposits, but then they fractionalized, created brand new money based upon those deposits. And we were on a gold and silver standard, but we still used debt for money. But what you really, you know, you have to understand, there's a difference between using gold and silver for money and being on the gold and silver standard. And people who want to get to know about this can go to the Congressional Research Service or have their congressman do it for them and get a copy of the 1792 Coinage Act. And it is the most thorough and complete document on everything you would want to know about gold and silver money, how it was to work, how it was to be denominated, the weight, the purity of the coins, who was to be in charge of it, who was to create it, what were the penalties for debauching the currency or debasing the currency. And that's especially the people who like gold and silver, and I think gold and silver is nice, but they need to understand they do not want a gold and silver standard. If we want to use gold and silver for money, that would be fine, but quite frankly, there isn't enough of it out there right now to meet our economic needs. Once you got all the debt out, and the Money Reform Act also allows for that once all the debt was out, it has a way that we could transfer over to once again using gold and silver coins as money. But that's what I would recommend, that people get a copy of 1792 Coinage Act. It's a wonderful piece of writing, and it's very enlightening and very educational.
And you get that from the government printing office?
I think you can, yeah. And I don't know if you can get it yourself. You know, sometimes some of these things you got to get your congressman or your senator to get it for you, but I got a copy of mine from someone else, so I never really had to worry about going out and getting one. But they should be available from someone if you go looking for it.
So, as how much headway are you making with your organization, Greg?
Well, in 1996, 1973, we turned into Congress 2 million petition signatures in favor of the Money Reform Act. We met last year with 47 U.S. congressmen and senators face-to-face. We made two or three trips to Washington where we had those meetings set up ahead of time. And we've had interest. We've got a couple of people now who think they might be willing to work at introducing the bill. We've had a number of them say that it would work. It's like anything else. Until the American people really get around to saying, why aren't things working? Taxation is a fruit issue. It's not a root issue. It's a symptom of the problem. It's not the cause of the problem. We're not going to solve things with taxation. We're not going to solve things by cutting and working harder and leaner and meaner. When they finally understand that maybe the money that they use is the root of the problem, then they'll put pressure on Congress, and of course they'll talk to their neighbor about it, and their neighbor will talk to them. We'll be talking about this as much as they're talking about O.J. Simpson or the balanced budget amendment or health care or property taxes. We'll actually get down to talking about the root of the problem, and then I think we'll get it changed.
But, you know, the American people are like trying to move, I'm trying to think of one of the Minnesota lakes into another county. It's hard to move that large mass of body, and it's hard to get people to change their habits.
Well, it really wouldn't take 250 million enlightened Americans because, you know, Bill, anything that ever got done in this country was basically done by a few people who were concerned, and they got connected with the other right people, and they got it done. I mean, this happens every day in America. But we have to have enough of them to where we can make a big enough showing, and, you know, then we'll get it done. When people start calling their congressman and saying, you know, hey, you know, what about this debt credit money system? You mean all money comes into circulation as an interest-bearing loan? If we don't borrow, I can't have any money? And the money that I'm actually trying to save is an interest-bearing loan created by someone somewhere? What's going on? And let them know that we want to look at something that hasn't been looked at before. And we'll get it done. And, you know, we have more people calling every day, people like you that want to hear this story. And we have people writing and calling us. I have people that are write editorials in newspapers about it now. People find it very interesting, and it's something never heard before, but it seems to make sense when you think about it, and it's growing, and I think with the help of people like you and what you're doing, I think we can make it happen.
Greg, quickly give your address again.
Okay. It's the Coalition to Reform Money, 7007 Linmar Lane, Edina, Minnesota, 55435.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Let Freedom Ring. If you would like a taped copy of this broadcast, send $10 to Let Freedom Ring, Post Office Box 8300, Fort Wayne, Indiana. The zip code is 46898. That address again, Let Freedom Ring, Box 8300, Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's IN 46898. Let Freedom Ring, restoring the United States Constitution for proud and patriotic Americans nationwide. Thank you for listening, and have a tax-free day. This has been a WDK Enterprises production.